Brian Barletta, so great to see you. And you're welcome. I literally mean that because before I started recording, you were already giving me tech advice on the new Shure microphone that I won from PodFest that I didn't know how to use it. So you're the gift that keeps on giving already.
Glad I could help. Great microphone.
Yeah. Yeah. Now I'm going to, you know, play Brian Barletta on a podcast one day. So I should explain who you are, but I really can't because you've done so much. And half of the things you've done are things that I can't even pronounce. But there is one thing that I read about, and I'm going to ask you to explain how you got to this one point in your early stage career. You worked on the development of one of those first mobile ads where you could shake the phone and make the ad do stuff. Is that right?
Yeah.
All right. How did you get there?
Yeah. So I wanted to be a history teacher pretty much my entire life. Yeah. And at best, I was a C student, even in history, but it was my goal. And, you know, I was obsessed with technology, but it was always really funny to me because I saw my dad like strike out in that industry that I didn't want to make it my career, but it was my hobby. And so at 14, I got a job at McDonald's and I used every penny I had to buy a Nokia phone. And everything I made went into buying the next greatest phone all the way up until we got to the iPhone and the Android phone. And when I was in college, I ran a site called appv.com and androidapps.com. And we were some of the first people to review these apps. And by we, I really mean we had a guy running the site and we had me recording 6 to 12 videos a day after playing with an app for 15 minutes, trying to walk people through it visually and explain what goes on there. I met these awesome people at MediaLets who eventually moved me to New York. They're like, you know how to talk to developers. You know how to do all these things. And before HTML5 was in mobile, actually before HTML5 was out, we were doing animated rich media ads in mobile. And it was very cool, very time consuming, but really exciting. And so, you know, in my early 20s, they moved me to New York and that started my advertising career.
Amazing. Amazing. I love that. I still don't really understand a lot of what you said, but I'm still wowed by it. This is E.B. Moss, and this is episode 29 of Insider Interviews. And I've been waiting a long time for this interview because I have known Brian here and there for about the past year and a half, and I hang on his every word. So I'm going to share more words with you from Brian Barletta of Sounds Profitable. So Brian is known for being a guy that explains things to people. So welcome, Brian. So happy
to
have you here.
Thank you for having me. Yeah, yay. I'm happy to be here. I love your stuff as well. And it's honestly, you were one of the first people who I interacted with when, you know, I was really kicking up my own space in the podcasting industry. And I really appreciate everything you've done to help boost what I'm doing and all the collaboration we've been able to have so far.
Thank you. Yeah, and now you've left me in the dust.
I don't know about that. You cover all the marketing and that's so neat. And I think that you have the ability to have a wider reach. I mean, I'm covering podcasting, which is hot right now, but you know, that's a subset of what you do. And you get the awesome aspect that you can pull in all these different people and get the different opinions. There's sometimes where I hit an echo chamber, right? Because people in podcasting want to talk about podcasting and you should have seen how difficult it was to get to talk to somebody who had some social media influencer marketing experience for that article that Shreya Sharma ran for us.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. Well, we are going to be a little meta here, actually. So this is a podcast, but we're going to talk about podcasting. What's great about having you on here is this is exactly how you describe yourself. I break down everything you need to know about ad tech in podcasting, from analytics to dynamic ad insertion, get in-depth detail from the experts. You've turned that into a very popular weekly newsletter and now a companion podcast yourself called Sounds Profitable. But really, Brian, what I think people adore about you and value so much is you do exactly what you say you're going to do. You break it down with patience and generosity. So thank you from the bottom of my heart. You've taught me a lot already. So
that means a lot. That's the entire goal. I mean, the industry, like it's really hard. I mean, especially in B2B, everything's about sales, right? At the end of the day, I am selling myself. I'm selling myself to people who want to sponsor this content, to be associated with it. But the sale, like my end of the bargain just happens, right? Like I'm just going to keep producing content. I told my wife when I started this, like, hey, I might not get sponsors for 2 years, so we might be eating ramen for a while. And thankfully that's not the case. We're at about 40 sponsors now, but my sale is one. It's straightforward. I'd love for you to be associated with this content. I'd love for you to share it and help me have the time to just explore these ideas. But at the end of the day, I just want to educate because I think that everything we're doing in this space, everybody who's covering it in like these big trade publications, they're trying to sell something. And that's not bad, but it just clouds it. And I don't know. We need more education. We need, I want people to outpace me with this information. I want one of my articles to stick with somebody and they find something they like and they become an expert. Then in 3 months from now, I have to interview them to understand what's going on.
Well, it's funny that you said that because I was reading something from one of your latest articles, and I think it's really emblematic of what you just said. I'm actually going to read this because I was very taken by it. This is an example of Brian explaining why we have to have things explained. You wrote, when buyers have a hard time translating tools, metrics, and services between advertising channels, we get friction. And friction prohibits more buyers from choosing podcast advertising as a viable channel, but that friction can be soothed with education. You didn't even tee me up to share that line. But
I'm glad you like that one. That's the whole focus. That embodies, you know, sounds profitable. That, you know, this industry should be bigger. Right? The fact that we're 1/10 the size of social media influencer marketing, that we have such great personalities in here, even some of the unknown people that are just busting their butt to create cool things. There's such an opportunity for brands to come in here of any size and really explore podcasting. But the truth is that we need to slow down. We need to educate ourselves. And then we need to educate everybody we're working with, because the answer when people are freaked out about like, oh, do you have mobile device IDs and do you have cookies in podcasting? The answer that the salespeople default to is, well, I can cut the price. It's not educate the person. It's immediately like, I understand that, half the price. Oh, you have another, we'll half it even more. And like, that's not what these people want. I mean, sure, I'm sure their boss is really happy that they're getting really dirt cheap CPMs. But at the end of the day, if you educate that person on why they misunderstood something, or like help them understand the differences in the space, that person might buy from you. They might buy a lot from you down the line or over the course of time, because now you've educated them and you've shown them that, but they're going to evangelize the platform. When they're talking shop with their friends about the success they found in a new medium, they're going to pass on that knowledge. They're going to say, oh, well, an expert told me it. And so my job is just to be a resource for everybody in this space that are having those conversations, to take that and learn from it and then pass it on.
I understand a little bit now when you explained, you know, being a teenager and aspiring to the next better phone, the next better phone. My nephew is exactly the same. So let's continue your path, because I want to understand what really jazzed you and helped you transition from sort of the ad tech overall to podcasting ad tech. And then I want to get to what you think a couple of our biggest issues are, how you explain them, and then the grand finale will be the crystal ball of Brian Barletta. How's that sound?
Man. Yeah, that sounds great. Now I got to think
small
about
order.
The future.
So let's keep going. Where did you land next?
Yeah, so I was in New York working for MediaLets, and I spent probably about 6 years in the digital rich media space. It was a lot of fun, very cool. And, you know, mobile had taken off, right? In-app advertising and web advertising that could be really impressive in what it could do. And so the last company I ended up in before I transitioned to podcasting was a company called AdTheorent. And they did really great mobile ads. One of the big things that they did was they tracked attribution for the ads, and they did it internally. And they decided they wanted to bring that as an external tool. So it went from being the internal tool known as Traction to Barometric, their external tool, which I was one of the founding members of. And we allowed everybody to use it to track attribution for a mobile campaign and or any, honestly, any digital campaign. And then Progressive Auto Insurance and WNYC one day asked our salesperson, can you track attribution in a podcast? And the salesperson said yes. And I said, oh no, we got to figure this out. And thankfully, the device graph that we had was more than suited enough for it. And through an IP-based match, we were able to prove that we could do it. Now, obviously not as accurate on a one-to-one Facebook level type scale as other digital platforms have for attribution, but directional, right? And we even broke it down into four levels and made it really neat there. And we spent better half of 5 years straddling that line between podcast focus and universal. And towards the end of it, before we sold to Claritas, we were almost decidedly podcasts. And it was really cool because at that time, I'd just gotten back into podcasting with Serial. I'd listened a lot in the early 2010s.
You personally had gotten into it, yeah. Meaning you were consuming it a lot. You weren't working with Serial. Okay, got it.
Oh, no, I wish. Yeah.
That we all really do. That's cool. Why I asked. It was like, wait, how did I miss that part of his biography?
Okay. No, that would have been prominent on my biography. Yeah, I'd been listening since like 2011, I think, to podcasts, and fallen on and off from them. I'd find something I'd like and then get back into it. And then Serial really just pulled me back in. And I said, this is going to be a big thing. And I still think it's growing with the same intensity. I still think there's some really cool things coming. I still think we haven't hit the year of ear or whatever people want to call it, which is a great sign. When we start saying that, that means that we're at the top and then we can only go down from there. So I think we got a while to go. But we made the shift. We figured that it was better to focus specifically on podcasting, and it turned out to be a good bet. And then we ended up at being acquired by Claritas, which was very cool.
And you worked at Megaphone also, yes?
I did, yeah. After about a year at Claritas, I wanted to try something different. I loved the team over at Megaphone. I thought they were doing some really neat things. So I came on as a senior product manager for data and monetization, which meant that I oversaw the ad server and the data processing. And then I was also a sales engineer for the operations team. And Megaphone has some pretty cool tech. I mean, it powers Spotify's streaming ad insertion. And that's one of the reasons Spotify bought them. But the big reason that Megaphone, in my opinion, is such a hot commodity is their operations team and their sales team. They get it. They want to learn. Every single person on that team had questions and wanted to understand it and wanted to better be able to speak to it, which is really powerful because it meant that every level, all the way down to the most junior person, could theoretically field a conversation with the most senior person asking questions about podcasting and how it doesn't match other mediums. And that was just a lot of fun to be able to be that resource.
So then, Brian, I think you're so smart, but in middle of a pandemic, you launched Sounds Profitable.
Yeah.
You're not even a year old, right?
No. At the time of recording this, we're just under 8 months old. Yeah. I mean, look, I'm comfortable being pretty frank with it at this point. There were differences, right, between how I viewed things and how Megaphone viewed things. And we kind of just agreed it wasn't a good fit. And the real rough conversation to have in the middle of a pandemic, you're super right, with a kid on the way. I already have one kid. We knew we were pregnant with the second kid. And it was, you know, not my smartest decision at the time, but I think in hindsight, it was really good to follow my gut. I'm proud of the Megaphone team on their sale to Spotify. They just came on as a sponsor. So, you know, we have a great relationship still. And so I just started writing. And I wasn't sure what I wanted to do next, if it was writing or whatnot. But James Cridlin of Pod News gave me this platform. And it turned out that a lot of people were hungry for it. A lot of people weren't being educated by their companies on how anything worked in podcasting. They didn't have an outlet to ask any questions. And you know, so many people aren't even told when they join a company in podcasting, like, hey, sign up for Pod News. It'll tell you everything that's going on. Sign up for Hot Pod or all these different things. And so this became a resource that people shared around for sales and account managers and ad ops people. And when we launched in September, our goal was 500 subscribers by the end of the year. I think we hit 500 in a week. And now we're at 8 months, we're almost at 3,000 subscribers. And it's really, really solidified that this was the right step, that there's a hunger for this. And that while companies could provide it internally, I think that I need to give them a little bit of slack and realize that, like, each company would have to hire someone like me and just be like, hey, why don't you go figure out what's interesting to talk about this week? And that's a lot for one company to foot the bill for. So it's been nice to be that resource for so many companies.
Yeah. And 40 sponsors and you're not eating ramen. So
no, we've been doing good. I'm very excited there. I did not expect the success we have. I've made it a priority to turn around and use the sponsorship as much as I can to empower other people, like the Podcasting Seriously Fund, which is all about paying for the submissions for companies like that are run by BIPOC or marginalized genders or disabled folk in podcasting to submit to different awards. My entire focus has been on like trying to use sponsorship money to support those funds, which we've donated to, you know, paying writers of a diverse background so that it's not just a bunch of, you know, cis white dudes talking about ad tech and podcasting and trying to just elevate voices. So I'm very thankful for my sponsors, and they've really helped me use Sounds Profitable as a platform to help others.
That's awesome. And I just want to reiterate, Podcasting Seriously is something that was created by Lantigua Williams. And I did interview Julika Lantigua Williams in a previous episode. And so what they're doing to enable BIPOC submissions of podcasting awards is terrific. I think that they've raised about $20,000 to help cover fees for those award submissions thus far, which is great.
I think they exceeded that. 20 was their goal. I want to say they exceeded it, which is really exciting.
Yay. Yeah. All right. Well, I wanted to let you know that we have a surprise mystery guest. So, surprise, say hello. We have Brian, and now we have Ryan. Hi, Ryan Rose.
Thanks for having me.
Good to see you,
Ryan.
Too.
How's it going, Brian?
It's the two newbies of podcasting are killing it. I wanted to bring Ryan on as a surprise mystery guest because he is another person who sort of quote unquote quit his day job and came out smelling like a rose. Sorry, I just made that up. Hey, Ryan, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I am not going to pronounce this because this is your story to tell. But share with Brian and me and everyone else what you're calling your company and how it came about.
Got it. The company is called Jonah Kiri, which is a portmanteau or a combination of two different words. It's the combination of two Japanese disciplines, Jonetsu, which is passion, and Kiritsu, which is discipline. So the whole concept behind that is I want to be able to help talent meet their actual disciplines in order to be able to actually execute the full capabilities that they can. So a lot of talent don't typically have the guidance that is needed or even the sponsors or the funds that they need to be able to get to where their dreams want to get them to be able to go. And that's the goal of Jonah Kiri, is to be able to help guide talent to all the places they want through a combination of sponsorships and partnerships.
So in a nutshell, if we had five floors and an elevator, that would be that you help sponsors align with podcast talent primarily? Or is that the one floor view?
Yeah. So I would say it would be, I wouldn't even look at it as podcasting. It's any type of talent across any discipline. If they have any content that they want, that they can offer to audiences and to brands, it's me being the matchmaker to be able to facilitate communications and opportunities between talent and brands.
And so the fact that you just came from DAX, big podcast company, just meant that that was your most recent core competency, but really you are screen agnostic, as they say.
Correct. Discipline right. Agnostic, medium agnostic, all of it.
Okay. All right. So Ryan, if you could ask Brian anything about ad tech, if you were stumped about something, what would you most like him to explain? Make it a difficult one.
I would say, where are we going in this cookie-less world? What does that mean? What are the consequences for podcasting?
Brian?
Yeah. Oh, man. That's a good one. So in the day-to-day for ad serving and for what a publisher directly handles themselves, it's meaningless, right? There's no level of targeting that's really going to negatively impact on, I would say, like the small to medium-sized podcast advertising front. Where it impacts things is when we use device graphs like Nielsen, like LiveRamp, Experian to match podcast information to that device graph. So these device graphs were motivated to collect as much data as possible. Cookies, device IDs, postal address, email addresses, every single thing. And they always overlooked IP address. But now that we're having all these privacy regulation changes, which I'm a big fan of, I know it's shocking to be pro-privacy and pro-ad tech, but basically IP address has become infinitely more valuable. And IP address is the only unique identifier that we get in podcasting. So the first thing is that these device graphs are going to shrink. Before, if I made a request from my household and my mom had come to visit in the last month, there's a chance that Nielsen could identify the segments that my mom would have from all the things that she visited to my household, because we're just matching off of IP. But in the last month, there'd been 4 extra devices in my household that have their own habits. And we don't know when those fall off. So the removing of cookie, removing of device ID means that the data that they have is less wide, but far more accurate. So they might not have as many segments about my household, but the ones they have will be first party gathered, meaning that the websites themselves that I log into, that I take action on, are sharing them with the device graph. So that's the biggest part there for the ad serving side of it. For attribution and tracking, what it means is we're going to be able to connect a few less dots, but it means that the dots we do collect will be that much stronger for directional. So attribution in general in podcasting isn't 100%. If we make the rough assumption that 50% of all podcast downloads, which is where we track in podcasting, are at the household level, we had to throw away the other 50% because you can't track those. IP address is ultimately useless outside of the household. So of those 50%, we were able to match to their household and to all the devices and then see those devices on any environment making the conversion or engagement on a website for attribution. Now what we're saying is that IP is going to match to a device graph that has less touch points, but they're going to be way more accurate, more fresh, and more opted in, like actually verified opted in. So it means that we're not going to see as many conversions, but the ones we see, we're going to be far more comfortable claiming that they're accurate. And still, because we were only dealing with 50% beforehand, we know that in podcasting, we're set up to talk about everything directional. This strategy drove more conversions. This strategy had more conversions over the baseline. And we never try and say this is exactly how many conversions had happened overall. So I think we're in a really good spot in podcasting. I think that if we had more vocal people in the space that were taken seriously outside of podcasting, Ad Monsters and Adweek would be writing articles that talk about like, hey, you should look to podcasting for how this is done because they've been doing it for 20 years.
Does that clear everything up for you, Ryan? Because I swear to you... He sounded like he had prepared for that. You totally sprung that question on him. And my head is exploding.
It's a common one. It's everybody's nervous about it. Cookies and device IDs are the thing that you can fall back on. It's when people talk about why they spend so much on Facebook or even Spotify for streaming, it's because they know the listener to the exact device and action and profile. And that's what those sales teams are out there saying, right? Hey, can they target the person as exact as we can? And the answer is no. But that isn't the end of the story, right? So that is a very common question. And it's because we get marketed into that hole by these other industries that can say, well, I know when the user has their phone in their hand or in their pocket. Nobody cares. Like we don't need to market that deep. Remember, we're going after a lot of times radio and TV advertisers. That's a big draw for podcasting. So as a good friend at a big network once said to me, most of the advertisers and agencies they're talking to are more interested in targeting people who brush their teeth versus people who buy barbecue only in Texas. So you don't need a lot of targeting to accomplish ads for people who brush their teeth. It should be pretty much everybody in podcasting.
Got it. All right. Well, Brian, brilliant. I'm going to have to play that back about 7 times, but it's going to be helpful.
I think we need one cheaters.
Yes, exactly. And now let's reverse roles a little bit. We're going to have the Brian ask the Ryan, because you come, Brian, from a lot of empathy about how salespeople can do their jobs better. Ryan recently was in that social and marketing and ad sales space with Dax. And now with his talent in bringing all things together in that sort of marketing softer space of sponsorships, and you having so many sponsors, what would you ask him? How would you grill Ryan?
So, okay, I want to set this up for a second. So Ryan fits into a category of people that I think are going to be the next, the hottest things in the next 2 years in podcasting. The technology is more than enough, right? There's so much room for more innovation, but we barely scratched the surface of what we had. We're going to see experts in this space do so many cool things with it. There is more than enough inventory. We're drowning in it, right? Every podcast out there can monetize if they want to, directly or indirectly. There are so many options. But the biggest hurdle we have in podcasting today is getting more advertisers into the space. It's why Megaphone sold. It's why AdvertiseCast sold. It's why Podcorn sold. They're specifically skilled at bringing people in and handling order management. So I guess my question to you, Ryan, is if someone is skilled at interacting with advertisers already from outside the podcasting space, what do they need to learn to become skilled at bringing them into podcasting?
Yeah. So I would say my recommendation, and just to give you some really quick background there, is when I started at Dax, what I was really focused on was building this podcast vision from the ground up and understanding what podcasters were looking for when it came to sponsors. And once I was able to bring them on board, then my skill set really became, how can I start creating these packages that sponsors would find a lot of appeal in? And a lot of my focus began in, well, what exactly is it that sponsors are looking for? Is it just host read mid-rolls, or is it programmatic? And as I started to develop that and eventually started my own thing, where I learned that there was a lot more opportunity beyond just podcasting, I learned that a great way to bring advertisers into the picture is not just focus on the podcast channel. And I know that's not applicable for everyone, but what I would recommend is find a way where you can bring the advertiser into the picture, that it's not just focusing on one medium. And that's where I really think that there's a lot of opportunity, is I think audiences personally would like to see brands being involved with talent in a much more integrated or holistic or 360 way, however you want to call it, rather than just hearing them on one channel. Because again, this is subjective, but my personal opinion is when people see that any type of talent, whether regardless of their discipline, are much more integrated and involved with the brand, I think that they see that there's a really well thought out campaign and activation, however you want to call that, but they're much more involved together. And it's something that isn't just an ad for the sake of getting paid. It's, hey, we're actually thinking about really fun ways to work with each other. There's a great fit in this context. How can we bring it all to light? And I think, depending on whatever content you have that you could bring to the table, whether that's any type of social or YouTube video, figure out a way to bring that into your sponsorship package and make it much more holistic and not just, here's one type of opportunity that we can give you, and if you like it, maybe we can renew.
Do you think that the blending of all those different channels would allow a publisher of a small to mid-size to take advantage of a non-standard payment structure, right? Like, so CPM becomes the default with so many things, but if it's $50 CPM and you have 1,000 impressions, right, that's $50, right? Some people won't cash a check for that. So if I have a decent podcast following and an okay social media and all those things, but I combine it all together, can I, as a publisher, get away with representing it as a sponsorship instead of focusing on this CPM for YouTube and this CPM for Facebook and this CPM for podcasting?
Yeah. So my answer to that would be, and this is potentially debatable, but social is a great proxy for this argument, where everything that I've seen with social types of sponsorships, to me, the number has been relatively arbitrary in that depending on what people think there's demand for the talent, that's a price tag that they're willing to pay for. So that's really a small way of answering that in saying, if there is a large opportunity where you can help, or you can just facilitate an opportunity between talent and a brand, it doesn't have to necessarily be a CPM basis or a CPA basis. It could be, listen, this overall sponsorship package we think is worth $50,000 because even though it might take 1 month or it might be over a course of 1 year, we think that this is the value that it's worth, right? And maybe there's some backing to that monetary value. Maybe there isn't. But at the end of the day, if the brand finds that there is value in that, even though there's not some type of CPM or CPA metric to it, I think that it could be something that works out. And I've seen that plenty of times where it's a flat price. Here's the rate. And we think that this is worth it. And if not, then it might not just be a good fit. But oftentimes there is that learning process of trial and error and starting out high and allowing for some wiggle room so you can negotiate down, finding that happy medium, and then being able to pick up the price as the value increases.
I have to say, I am completely blown away by both of you. And I love both of those answers and your spontaneous questions. There's going to be a lot of replays of this podcast. I know it. And I also think that I am sort of the complement to your yin-yang over there. We have, you know, the ad tech and the sponsor development, and I represent content marketing, and I need the Brian expertise, and I thrive on the Ryan perspective, because from where I sit, being a journalist and a podcaster and former television marketer, I believe that any sponsor wants to flow their message cohesively and consistently across all screens. So I love that. And I also, you know, have not ventured into trying to get a sponsor for insider interviews. I am signed up now with Buy Me a Coffee. So you can buy me a coffee. I'll leave that in the show notes. But I've never asked for dough. And if I were, it would not be on a CPM basis because I have a very select and discriminating audience. But I get quality people, right? People want to align with good content. And that's the value of content marketing. So I love you both, man.
Yeah. And just to jump in there at that point, really, I think there's a real appeal with sponsors, even though you might be a small podcast, even though you might not have a huge following, whoever you are. I think at the end of the day, there's a real appeal to be able to go to a brand, whether that's through a direct relationship or through an agency. But at the end of the day, regardless of what your following is, you always have a right to be able to go to a brand, because if your content's about health, I think that a company like, you know, just a hypothetical, but BetterHelp would be a great company to go to and say, listen, we don't have the largest following, but this content really matches what your brand messaging is about. And even though we might not be able to convert a ton, this is something that could be an early investment for you to look into. And regardless of whether or not we actually end up converting in the long term, there's an opportunity for your brand to be engulfed in content that really makes sense to you.
Yeah, content that they want to use, right? That's a big part of it too. Like if that becomes talent, like you're saying, and you're wording it that way, and they're creating content that the brand can then use elsewhere, that's really powerful. Audioboom just released a report, right? That said something like it was almost double the length of the ad spots that they bought when they did baked in ads with some partners. And I think what that really emphasizes is that the flexibility of the relationship, that small partner, that small podcast who's super passionate about your product and reach out to them, they might do it for a few bucks and a free product. I mean, heck, I got a Peloton for 50% off while I was working at Barometric, and I talk about it all the time. You know what I mean?
Like, years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. And so and we still use it. It's great. But that's the truth of it is there's creative ways on all ends. And it's about the longer term investment. And I think Ryan does that right. But, you know, EB, I think the big thing that the three of us, why we're all getting attention right now is really because we're accessible. Like the room for growth for people like the three of us is in the fact that we're not tied down by a big company. We can make decisions on our own that allow us to work with the companies we want. I'm sure me and Ryan and you all have had at least one consulting client that you took because you were like, oh, gotta get groceries this week. And then as you get bigger and as you're doing better, you can be discerning. But the truth of it is that if you go email one of these big companies or brands or sponsors, they might not have time to answer you. They have so many people messaging in and all that. If you email any of the three of us, we're going to respond. I respond to everything. I'm sure that both of you do too. And that is what I think, that's why there's growth here. And that's why I don't think any of the three of us should be afraid. And this space shouldn't be afraid of more people entering it, because there's not enough of each of us to handle everything. And that's why I'm excited. I think there's room for that bespoke relationship.
Ryan, before you popped in, the other thing we have in common, by the way, is that we all three started our entrepreneurial current ventures during a pandemic. Brian talked about his. So tell us a little bit more about Jonah Curie and where you're at now. You know, you are welcome to drop any names if you'd like to. And then I'm going to wrap it up by asking you each for that, you know, proverbial projection for the industry and your respective spaces. So, Ryan, what's been going on?
Yeah, well, a lot, to say the least.
I'm so proud of you.
Thank you. I think the big impetus for starting my own thing was really, I saw a lot of opportunity beyond podcasting, right? So to go back to that point, what I was really focusing on at DAX was how can I help podcasters monetize? And I saw an opportunity to just help talent monetize. And I wanted to take one step back and figure out what are all the different channels that we can bring into the picture. And as I started really building this thing for DAX, I realized that I became obsessed with revenue models, with revenue stream diversification. And it went hand in hand with being able to work with talent and not only do what I knew best, which was coming up with sponsorship packages regardless of the medium, but figuring out how to go the next step beyond that and say, well, sure, we're monetizing content, but how do we bring talent to other channels? How can we bring OTT into the picture? How can we potentially bring NFTs into the picture? Not to start a whole, you know, rabbit hole there, but I really like the idea of being able to go down my path of, I want to be able to choose which direction I want to go and learn about the channel or the medium because I just have the time to, because I am making the personal decision to make the mistake if I have to learn that maybe that's not the most optimal route. But I love the concept and I really uphold to the fact that it's my responsibility to be able to learn every single type of opportunity that I could bring to the table for any of the talent that I'm working with. And just a name drop, as you requested, a good example is the Investors Podcast Network. One of their signature shows is We Study Billionaires, which we're doing about 500,000 downloads per week. And it's really coming up with ways beyond just host Red Minerals, right? Now we're looking into figuring out how to do advertorial interviews. And a good example here to give credit to Wait What, which does the podcast Masters of Scale with Reid Hoffman and Meditative Stories. They are really one of the most influential podcasts out there. Not only am I obsessed with their content and I respect who they are, but their creative advertising format is brilliant in that they do these mini interviews throughout the episode. And they do this sequential storytelling and they interview the actual sponsor, right? So with Capital One as their current sponsor, they're interviewing a thought leader from the brand and they figure out how to really engage in discussion that's not just a host-read 60-second traditional spot. And we're starting to look into that route with We Study Billionaires in that we're working with a lot of financial category brands and we don't want to only do a 30 or 60-second spot, but actually be able to have an interview within an interview. And then there's social, there's video, there's radio, right? And there's so many opportunities that we could bring to the table and I love being able to figure out how we can just see what else we could do. So that's really what Jonah Curie is doing at the end of the day is how can we help talent all across the table, regardless of where you're coming from, regardless of whether you're a celebrity, an athlete, a writer, a producer, or just a content producer with no following whatsoever. It's how can we bring the right brands to you and make sure that it's a great experience for the audience, for the brands, and for the talent themselves.
Fantastic. So Brian, in your 30-second wrap-up of finger on the pulse, what's new, what's next, what would you say?
Order management.
I'm sorry, what
order,
now?
Order management.
Amen.
Everybody's working in Google Sheets. It is. We are one car crash away from a company going under because their account manager couldn't make it to their computer. Everything is just so close. So close. And so many people have neat ideas, but nobody's focusing on it. Order management is absolutely the focus. Everybody who has their stuff together has a solid format, but they're copy and pasting way more than they should. And I can't imagine that it's completely unique to podcasting, but I will tell you that it's got a bigger pain point here than anywhere I've ever seen. And whoever solves that is going to do very well.
Okay.
Yep. I am an avid Google spreadsheet user, which I admit can be at fault plenty of times.
Yeah. You don't save quick enough on it. Or the macros don't go between sheets, or you have one sheet that's so long with so many tabs, or you forgot about one, or you're in a different login, or ooh, I'm still connected to some from other companies I worked at 10 years ago because they used my personal Gmail. So I can see how Pad Squad is still doing advertising wise.
Yes. Yes. Ditto. Wow. Wow. Ryan, anything to add? Anything in your painter pleasure future?
What I'm most excited about is seeing Omnichannel develop, of course, right? I think giving credit to where it's due, Locked On Podcast, which was recently bought by public company Tegna, there's a lot of exciting things that are going to be coming up just because they have a lot more vision than podcasting. They're going to be bringing video to the table. And then with their recent partnership with Entercom, now Audacity, there's a lot of really cool partnerships that they're going to be able to activate with all of their rights. And yeah, so in general, it's how can we bring radio to the table, social, how can we bring TV, OTT, CTV, right? There's going to be a lot of fun opportunities and we haven't even scratched the surface.
Well, my prediction for the future is that the three of us as sort of mouseketeers, get it? It has to continue somehow. I like this idea. This was fun.
Here's my biggest request. When we finally can do something in person, we just grab a few drinks, we sit around, we invite anybody who wants, and we just talk. No stages, no nothing like that, right? Let's just make it more social. I got nothing to present. I want to hear from everybody. I want to interact with them. And I think the two of you have such great ideas that I think we could sit for hours just talking to different people.
I love that. From your mouth to God's ears and everybody else's. Brian Barletta of Sounds Profitable, Ryan Rose of Jonah Curie. Thank you so much for joining me. This was very spontaneous, but you guys don't need rehearsal. You're amazing.
Thanks for having us.
Well, I hope you got some good insider scoop from this episode of Insider Interviews with me, E.B. Moss. If you enjoyed this content, please feel free to buy me a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/mossappeal. And I hope you'll follow Insider Interviews on social media and let me know if you have a question or a suggestion for a next stellar guest in media, marketing, and advertising. Speaking of stellar, my theme music was composed and performed by the incomparable Grammy-winning John Clayton. If I can help you with your company's podcast, please find me at mossappeal.com. Thanks again for listening.